never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. WORT, Madison. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen to support. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got a year. Wow, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
You darn tootin'. You varmint.
Oh, he's gonna lay down some truth today.
Oh, man. Don't you just hate that? They call them truths. I mean, could anything be more egregious? Less humble. Yeah, everything comes out of my mouth is a truth. Yeah.
And then when they like retweet them, they say they're retruthing them or something.
Yeah, well, yeah. Kind of. Did you hear that thing about the NPR guy that was, he was slagging on NPR? There was like, they looked into the things he was complaining about. That he had, you know, it basically, so he was a guy on NPR and he was saying, oh, NPR is too liberal. It's like, oh, wow, really? Isn't it? You know, is there snow in Antarctica? I mean, come on. But I mean, he was giving examples to back up what he was saying. And it was all that the same crazy crap. It's like they don't believe in freedom of opinion because they won't give legs to the craziest made up conspiracy theories that are out there. I mean, why should we give free, you know, airtime or whatever it is? To evidence-free speculations. I mean, it's basically like political, social, and scientific gossip that gets bred in the gamey heart of the right-wing media. And if you don't like engage with it, somebody says you're like against the First Amendment or something, or you're not showing both sides. I mean, that just drives me absolutely nuts. Yeah. Anyway, but. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there used to be standards for, you know, those types of
and
things.
And practices.
And you'd practice your standards until you got good at it.
Perfect. That's right. But I saw that story and I was just like, I don't owe
you. But now it's like you say, any crazy-ass thing, it's like, oh, you got to talk about, you know, Aaron Rodgers said that Fauci created HIV.
Yeah, exactly. And, I do not need to be a node in your disinformation, you know, network here. A free node at that. I mean, that's the thing is about it, is they're trying to use media to basically, you know, as a freebie to spread their BS.
Right,
it's like,
right.
No, pay for it yourself. You know?
But when you think about the things that get talked about as far as issues,
it's gossip.
It's all driven by the right wing. I mean, it's all these made up stories about, you know, the trans people and the immigrants and diversity and equity and
90% of the time you're having to respond to their vastly overfunded provocations, right? I mean, they're getting millions and millions from all the crazies to put this stuff out there.
And they created it for a reason. Yeah, it's not like this came up organically.
It's like playing dodgeball. You're constantly having to figure out, okay, what do I do next? What do I do next? Because they've got it just flying at you 24/7. And then they're mad because you won't help them do that. You know? It's like, no. You know, talk to Rupert Murdoch. Get some more money. I don't know. Whatever you need, but don't get me into this.
I always like it when some right-wing troll, like a Tucker Carlson or Charlie Kirk or somebody says, well, Joe Biden won't debate me. I challenge him to a debate, and he's afraid to debate me. No.
Yeah, he's not debating any five-year-olds either. Yeah. So, you know. What's your problem there?
We should debate Aaron Rodgers.
That would be edifying.
Oh my goodness!
So. Anyway, I'm loaded for bear today.
I can
sorry.
Tell you're just kind of like, pig biting mad. Here,
I see that kind of stuff. It's just like what happened this week too with that stupid impeachment, quasi impeachment thing that they tried to get away with. They take these mainstream institutions. It's like every despot has done since democracy was invented. used democratic structures to turn basically people against democratic structures. They try to take advantage of this impeachment thing to basically, you know, because they don't like a policy and they're going to impeach some cabinet secretary. And then when the Senate called it out as, you know, the Senate Democrats called it out as the obvious trick and misuse of the institutions that it was, you're like, ooh, you've set a dangerous precedent. Ooh, you won't let us, you know. It's like, no, it was a trick from the outset and we're just calling it that. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Let's just call it that.
Sure.
Anyway.
Well, it also muddies the waters when someone like Trump is impeached for a good reason,
yeah,
or for a couple good reasons, because yeah, he was impeached twice,
yeah,
and then they can just say, see, it's political. It's, you know, the right. Democrats do it to us, we do it to the Democrats.
Right, because being a mafia boss with the military funds, that's, you know, that's that's perfectly normal in an international leader.
Did you see the Republican National Committee sent out something to all, like, the down ballot,
yeah,
campaigns this week, saying that and remember, Laura Trump is like the one of the people running the RNC now.
Oh yeah, and Brainiac, we yeah call her,
Mrs. I'm Eric. Yeah. But they said that they expected any fundraising from the down ballots to send at least 5% up to the national committee to help President Trump.
Right, and just like in the Middle Ages, he gets to sleep with your eldest daughter, yeah, as well.
And they said it was at least 5%. They said if you send more than that,
yeah,
you know, they will favorably report this to the people at the top.
Oh my God! The thing is, it's also atavistic. It's like we're, you know, Max Weber, this famous sociologist, said, you know, what happened in the development of the contemporary world is we created bureaucracy so we could rationalize how it is that power is distributed. And the older form is what he called charismatic society, where basically there's the boss and you try to suckle favor with the boss. Well, here we are. I mean, we're right back there.
5%'s the baseline.
The baseline.
But, you know,
you can
if you do better, we'll put in a good word for
it. Yeah, and I'm going to sit on the scale, and I want the gold tribute on the other side to at least equal my weight. That's a lot of gold tribute.
Daddy needs some legal fees.
Yeah. Man alive. I saw an article this week where they were talking about the guy was talking about the what could the relationship between Donald J. Trump and Melania possibly be like?
Oh my goodness,
that is an interesting puzzle. I think it's one of the higher mysteries. Like, you know, people worry about, like, how could the Trinity be true? Hey, I'm worried about how there could be a marriage between those two. That seems like something that's inexpressible.
How do they get her to smile?
She's thinking about what happens when he has that heart attack. Happening
have
there.
Have another Big Mac. Yeah, yeah. Darling.
Darling, yes, exactly. Well, I mean, the thing is, like Barron, you know, this, it all came up because he was talking about how he wanted to get out of the trial,
yeah,
you know, when his son was having his graduation ceremony. It's like, does he really? I mean, is that really a thing? Does
he's,
he really
he's never
about
he's
that?
Never been to any of his kids'
really
graduations.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and he wasn't even around when Barron was born because he was running around with the porn star. That's what the whole trial's about. He might not even been there when he was conceived.
Well, I don't know. The hairstyles look awfully similar.
Yeah. Barron's like 9 feet tall, though.
He is. So. He's very tall. But that's typical of the youth of today. I mean,
yeah,
they get taller and everything.
It's the miracle grow they put in the, yeah, in the formula.
Yeah. It's all the radioactivity. Yeah. In
our spray them with Roundup when they're babies.
Yeah, that'll do. Well, they get it whether they get sprayed with it or
oh,
not.
Oh, that's true. So. Yeah. So anyway, well, I had a very I've had a fun day planned here. I took Klopski on a nice walk on the Oregon Trail.
Yeah,
and nobody got dysentery, so
that
was
good. A few cow skulls around, but other than that, it was fine.
I found a deer skeleton in the Brooklyn wildlife area the other day.
Oh, very nice.
It was like a full skeleton. It was really cool, and the rib cages are huge.
That makes sense.
Which makes sense if you think about it.
But you need a big heart when you're running like a maniac.
Yeah, but you know, but I saw this in the weeds, and you know, and I hate to admit this, but I watch a lot of the true crime documentaries. And I saw that and I go, oh, I'm going to be that person who's walking the dog and finds the body in the woods, you know. But then I realized it was a deer, but it was very cool.
Was it picked clean?
Yeah. It was just bones.
Interesting. I mean, I've had friends that see coyotes.
Yeah, well, it's near Brooklyn, so, you know, some of the people in Brooklyn probably had a little feast and then left the bones.
Possibly. So you were out and having enjoying the weather. And
it was windy as craziness.
Yeah, but, I noticed it coming over.
But no, it was nice to get out. Well, I mean, we hadn't had the dog out because of the rain for a while.
Sure.
So he was pretty wound up. But then, after the show, I'm going to Milwaukee and I'm going to go see my guy, Graham Parker.
Oh, very good.
Playing at Shank Hall tonight.
Oh,
so,
excellent.
Going to stay overnight, make a little night of it, and just party down.
Aren't you lucky?
Yeah, so that'd be
good
fun.
For you.
I don't get to Milwaukee very often, so it's going to be kind of a treat, I hope.
Companion and I were there. Oh, we saw Randy Rainbow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we saw back when he was touring around, we saw him in Milwaukee. And then we went we went the next week just to go because we thought, Milwaukee, this is nice. So we
you know, I've lived here.
We forget it's
here. I've lived here forever. Milwaukee's, what, 70 miles away?
Yeah,
I get there, you know. Yeah. Once every 2 years.
Yeah, that's kind of the way we are, too.
It's like, oh, there's a big city here. What do you know?
It's very fun. We went to a breakfast place there that was just like, oh, this is really nice. They have things like that here. You know? Well, you get, you know, I mean, you live in the land of the lotus eaters here in Madison. You think everything's here. You don't need to go anywhere else. Everything else is probably like a little less nice, and people are a little creepier. You know, I mean, isn't that a terrible thing to say? But you live here long enough, you do start to feel like, oh, this feels kind of safe here.
Right.
And you're a little worried about venturing out too far into the.
Oh, I've had people,
I've
had people tell me, you know, be careful in downtown Milwaukee. It's like, yeah.
No, I'm not about that so much, but more of the kind of like, you know, you're not from around here.
Right. Kind of thing. No, that only happens when you go up north.
Two men of a certain age going in together. You know? It's kind of like, okay, flip a coin. What's going to happen?
You want two rooms, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
So the Senate did reject the impeachment charge, and it was on a party line vote. Except they had two charges, and on the first one, Lisa Murkowski, who is not happy right now with where her party is on a variety of topics, and of course, especially with the adulation of the great orange one, she actually just voted present. So the first vote, she wasn't even, they didn't even get their 48 or whatever it was that they wanted. So they just basically said, you know what, this is a stunt, and they just voted it down. They didn't even have a trial.
Mm-hmm.
So good for them. Call it out, you know? I mean, the one side plays pretty much by the rules, and the other side looks at the rules and goes, how can we twist those, you know?
Right.
It's like, just call it out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've been doing that since the Newt Gingrich era I mean, they decided that Bill Clinton was not a legitimate president.
Yeah, I remember that. And he's not my president.
Yeah, exactly.
Kids, that's what they said back in the day. I mean, this has been going on at least since Clinton, and the reason why, of course, is they had our first truly conservative Republican president was Reagan. It was Reagan and then Bush, 12 years of Republican rule. And they thought, you know what? We deserve it. There's no way anybody else could
ever win. There's 988 more years left in this.
And so anybody after that, from the get-go, they're like, oh, this is illegitimate.
Yeah.
And sometimes they didn't even have to worry about it. The person who actually got the most votes doesn't win because of our crazy system.
Yeah.
So that's happened twice already in the last 25 years.
The last time a Republican, well, it's since Clinton.
Yeah.
The GOP has only won the popular vote once
in
2004. And that was pretty close.
It was very close.
So.
Yep, if the Secretary of State of Ohio hadn't been up to monkey business, they might have. Remember that? That could have got. What was interesting about that? It could have gone the other way.
What was the Blackwell?
Mr. He was very well dressed. That was the one where my grandmother had to wait in line because they purposely. My late grandmother lived in Columbus, Ohio, and she lived near OSU because you know how it is.
The OSU.
Yeah, the OSU. Thank you. Yes. She lived in an old house, and the area had become gradually student, but she was still holding on to the place.
She still had a couple credits left before she graduated.
She did. I think it was in cello or something. I can't remember now. But anyway, but she went to vote, And they purposefully did not have enough voting machines to cover the density of the population. That was an intentional move on the part of the Republicans. And so there was my poor grandmother standing there, all these young people. And she was so impressed. She said, they were so nice to me. Someone went and found a folding chair. I think that's illegal in Georgia now, by the way.
Yeah. You can hit them with it.
Yeah, like found a folding chair.
Like an off the top roll.
And every time the line would move up, she'd stand up and they'd move the chair forward for her.
Yeah.
And she said that she had a very positive
view.
Did
she have to wait like 4 hours
or
something?
Yeah, 4 hours she did. Yep. But my grandmother, you know, she's gonna my grandmother's one of those like, nope, they're not gonna do that. You know, kind of thing. Not gonna happen.
Oh, what else is going on here? So foresters for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, they found some wooden deer stands on state land that were illegally set up on state land.
Okay.
And so they took them down. Mm-hmm. With dynamite.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you got to do the job thoroughly.
They didn't saw them down or knock them down. They blowed them up real good.
And then, oh my lord!
Some people said that was an overreaction, but I think it's a worthy thing.
It's a reaction. It's a choice.
It's a good message. Plus, it sounds like fun, doesn't it? I mean, blowing up a deer stand and...
Hey, also here at home, I don't know if you saw this, but Fodars, which is known for its travel guides, has ranked the various
fast food... And it's a hobbit, too, right?
Fast food. Yeah, it's an anagram.
Anagram.
They've ranked their top 12 best fast food chains in America.
Oh. Culver's?
And Culver's is number one.
Is it really? Number one.
According to travel writer Gina Truman, this is a story by Samara Kalk Derby in the Wisconsin State Journal. Travel writer Gina Truman said she spent a year driving around the United States eating and experiencing the culture of America. Poor Gina Truman. I feel sorry about
the late Gina Truman.
I can just feel the blood moving more slowly through my veins. This involved a lot of fast food. So here I am to offer my ranking. This is from Gina. My ranking of America's cult favorites, not the McDonald's, Burger King, or Wendy mega corporations, but the slightly smaller, breathlessly awaited chains that create lines snaking around city blocks each time a new location opens its doors. Now, you know all about this. Living in Oregon, of course.
Right.
And according to this gal, and apparently she knows, she said Culver's is the most delicious fast food pit stop in America. There, I said it. If you don't live in the Midwest, it's likely you've never heard of it. And if you don't live in the Midwest, what good are you anyway? Thankfully, she said the beloved fast food chain, which is, of course, based in Prairie du Sac, now has restaurants in 26 states.
So. Wow. People love the Culver's. I drove by. There's like the Culver's corporate headquarters in Prairie du Sac or
Prairie du Sac. Yeah. Yep.
And I drove by one day, and some people were getting married in front of the sign.
The nice thing is every Culver's has an emergency room right nearby, so it's really very
and it's a drive up.
Courteous.
It's a drive up bypass.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Clear.
You just, you know, recline your seat, and they'll clean you out, and you can go back for another Butterburger.
Yeah, I know. What's not to like about something called a Butterburger?
A Louisiana House committee voted yesterday to repeal a law requiring employers to give child workers lunch breaks.
Oh, good Lord.
And they also cut...
Where is this again? Sorry.
Louisiana.
Oh, of course.
And they also voted to cut unemployment benefits.
Oh, well.
Part of a push by Republicans to remove constraints on employers.
Yep.
Remove constraints on employers.
Yep. But they're trying to get it back to slavery as closely as they can.
You can't do it all at once.
Yeah, you got to do it by degrees. Exactly.
Yeah, so, they want to remove constraints on employers and reduce aid for injured and unemployed workers. So it's not just unemployment, it's workers' comp as well, too. So.
Weren't you involved in workers' comp?
I was involved in both of those.
Yeah. So, you know this, the beast from the inside.
Yeah, so Yeah, they're good programs. I mean, they're good progressive era programs.
Right. So, well, that's why they're again them.
Yeah. And they actually work really well.
Yeah. Can't have that. Got a related story. I mean, I don't know, maybe related. When you hear someone having to do this, you realize what a scary world we live in. So the Colorado legislature is considering a bill, basically. It's actually been passed. I'm sorry. It's a law that gives people privacy rights over their brainwaves.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought, what? So this was just on Wednesday, the governor of Colorado, Jared Polis, signed the bill for the first time, tries to ensure that data that could potentially be collected by analyzing neural data, that this is sensitive and is the rights, his privacy rights of the person who has those brainwaves. The fact that they need to, it passed 61-1, in their House and 34-0 in the Senate, so unanimously in their state Senate. But the idea that there might be people out there that you would think this is an unnecessary piece of legislation, but apparently it is not. It's taking aim, this law, at consumer level brain technologies. So, you know, I mean, right now I have to wait for you to like do a keystroke or look something up online and click and point at it. How much better I could buy, you know, get, you know, advise you on which Italian shoes you might like if it could actually read your mind. Wow. And apparently there are people that are trying to do this. We've never seen anything with this power before, says one member of the board of directors of the Colorado Medical Society, to identify, codify people and bias against people based on their brainwaves and other neural information.
Oh my God.
So it's not just for companies. It's also basically to create barriers to people who might be neural atypical in various ways, that you would have these this brainwave information and you could use it presumably in screening people out of opportunities for employment, but also just to strip mine them in terms of information. But so this is a real technology that people are trying to develop, and I'd never even heard of this. And of course it sounds like sci-fi, but as soon as you see something like this, you're like, wait, they're having to do what because of what? And you're like, oh God, we're all doomed.
Imagine going in for a job interview and yeah. You just sit on the couch and they just scan you and they go, okay, thanks for coming in.
You know,
and
I'm thinking of Karl Marx.
How do you lie then?
Karl Marx is sitting there in 1848 and he's thinking to himself, man, capitalism is bad. You know, it commodifies everything. I don't think even Karl Marx thought, wait, someday they'll commodify my brain.
Well, Elon Musk has a program where they want to
Melon Husk?
Insert chips into people's brains. And there are people volunteering to do this.
Of course there are.
Because they think it would be really cool.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And they could play video games without getting tired.
Yeah.
And,
So, no problems there.
You know, you just put a chip in the brain, then.
Yeah.
That's considered consent. You gotta click OK.
Yeah.
Before you.
That's the thing with that. It's like why people don't feel bad about it is because they invite the person in metaphorically, right? I mean, they're like, oh, click this, and it's like, okay, I consented.
Yeah.
But I mean, what if you consent to have somebody come in your house and they steal everything?
Or come on, kick you in the butt or something.
Yeah, well, take pictures and sell them to somebody else, or something like that. I mean, the consent part is completely. I mean, there's nothing there. It's completely useless.
Right.
But because it's what they do after they're in there, then rummaging around and then selling. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir, but selling this information to third parties, selling to other parties and so on. So I was talking to a friend who was involved in the data breach that Group Health it happened to Group Health. First of all, it was not Group Health that did it. It was some company they were contracting some vendor. And so then Group Health is now being sued for this, which is completely ridiculous because it's somebody else's responsibility. But the thing that got me about this was they promised some people who had worried that their data would be compromised, like a year's ability to check on what their data was doing.
Yeah.
It's like, who the hell has my data and why? Like, what is going on here? I mean, it's the same kind of thing.
All
it's
over.
Like, yeah, I was like, screw you. Anyway.
But you get 3 cents off of a bag of oranges.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what I've said. I have people have not been as pushy, but it used to be back in the day at Barnes and Noble, they would try to get you to sign up for their program. They say, well, you get, you know, blah, 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 blah. And one person even said to me one time, we think you're too cool to do it. And I'm like, no. I said, if you pay me what my information is worth, I'd be happy to get into your club. But they don't know. They're just being told by the boss to sign as many people up as possible.
Right. The Biden administration yesterday finalized a new rule for public and management that's meant to put conservation on more equal footing with oil drilling, grazing, and other extractive industries on vast government-owned properties.
Mm.
Officials pushed to pass strong opposition from private industry and Republican governors to adopt the proposal. GOP members of Congress said in response that they will seek to invalidate it.
Mm-hmm.
The rule from the Interior Department from the Bureau of Land Management, that they oversee 380,000 square miles of land, mostly in the West. They'll allow public property to be leased for restoration in the same way that companies lease land for drilling. So that's kind of a neat thing to actually say conservation is a valid use of this land.
Right. Yep.
You know, rather than just saying, what's it good for? You know,
yeah.
What can we get out of it? And
right. Yep. Let's hang on to it. President Biden, speaking of which, was in Scranton. You probably saw this. And he made some jabs at his predecessor. And especially in terms of the former president's wealthy upbringing and his friendships with billionaires, and of course he's also pretending to be one himself. But he mostly focused, the president did, on the 2017 tax cuts, which of course just basically, you know, added fuel to the fire of the you know, the incredible gap between incomes in the United States. According to President Biden, Donald Trump looks at the world differently than you and me. He wakes up in the morning at Mar-a-Lago thinking about himself. How can he help his billionaire friends gain power and control and force their extreme agenda on the rest of us? I doubt if he probably wakes up thinking about, you know, Jimmy Kimmel or something. If I had to guess, but anyway, he's
or the omelet bar.
Yeah, he's got horrifying toadies to think of these things for him. Mr. Biden laid out his proposal. He would like to, if he is reelected and if he can get this done, he would like to expand the child tax credit, providing a $10,000 tax credit for first-time home buyers, and raising the minimum tax rate for billionaires and corporations. And the president also said, we know the best way to build an economy is from the middle out and the bottom up and not from the top down. And that's true. If you're making a bunch of crap, you have a consumer economy, you better have some people that can buy it.
Yeah. Well, that's like the programs we were talking about earlier with the unemployment and workers' comp.
Yeah.
When people get an unemployment check, they spend it.
Yeah.
And they spend it on things like rent and groceries and gas for their car. And, you know, and it moves around.
Yep.
And people,
we need another pandemic is what we need.
It was funny.
Child poverty went down during the pandemic.
A lot of stuff got better. I mean,
it's crazy.
It's amazing the things that that a pandemic, you know, shined a bright light on. You know, it's like, oh, these people working at the grocery store, they're pretty valuable. We kind of need them.
Right.
You know, and then of course we forgot about it
10 minutes later. Yeah, right. What? What's going on? Yeah. Anyway, ex-vice president, Al Gore, was in the news this week. He was in New York City at a leadership training meeting convened by the Climate Reality Project, which that's his nonprofit that he has. And people were asking him questions, you know, about the environment, of course, and about the politics of the environment, and asking him in particular about Donald Trump. You know, did he think Donald Trump was going to win? And he doesn't think he's going to win. I refuse to accept the hypothetical that Trump's not going away. I don't think he's going to win. Why? I think this is the former Vice President Al Gore. I think that the long political tail of inflation is going to be attenuated by November. I think that the increasing economic strength in America's job market is going to continue to give benefits to President Biden. Trump is vulnerable to making more mistakes as the pressure on him increases. You see him flailing on the questions related to choice. I don't portray myself as a skilled political analyst, but the number of months between now and the election is, to use a cliche, a lifetime in politics. I would way prefer to have, I almost got into his accent there, I would way prefer to have Biden's political position right now than Trump's. But Trump's in the news every day. Why? Yeah. That's free publicity.
Hey, he stayed awake a couple of days this yeah. week during the trial. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, the first two he dozed off, but then I think he's...
You're talking about Sleepy Don?
He did okay. As far as I know, he stayed awake today, too. Yeah. I like that he's complained that it's cold.
Oh, my God, yes. Why doesn't he bring his shawl with him while he's at it? I'm just kind of like, I mean, again, these things are epiphenomenal. Who cares? But I see Biden, I saw a thing this week talking about how he dresses. So he's a sharp dresser. He could be a sharp dresser. He's a slender man who gets a lot of exercise. I mean, it's easy to find clothes that look nice on you and do that. I mean, that's not the case for Mr. Trump, which is fine. But it's the point is that they're all on the Republican side trying to make it out like Joe Biden is some kind of fossil or something like that. And then look at your guy. He's an old guy, too. You know, like, that's really not a winning issue for you. So there he is in the courtroom snoozing, complaining about, could somebody turn the thermostat up? You know, it's like, do you hear this or do you not hear this? Like,
and put Matlock on.
Put Matlock on. They wouldn't do it like that in Matlock. Yeah, I'm sure they wouldn't.
I loved his comment where, you know, they have these strikes where you can get rid of prospective jurors.
Sure.
And he said, I thought we had unlimited number of strikes.
I'm sure he did.
So can you imagine if you had an unlimited number of strikes? You would never set it.
Well, that's the idea.
Set a jury.
I mean, he is the maven of this whole, again, abuse of the system, right? I mean, he's all of his trials have been delayed except for one because of the tricks that he's pulled, trying to pull everything. I mean, this whole thing. And of course, the fact that he's stuffed the judiciary with his toadies and lackeys and so on. But I mean, it's just kind of like, yeah, I mean, we're never going to get a clear picture of any of this stuff, probably, except for the one thing that, you know, in the total scheme of things seems kind of low level. I mean, not nice, but certainly low level, which is trying to hide the fact that he's a scamp, you know, whatever. I'm less worried about that than I am the, you know, the riot and the, you know, trying to basically, you know, reduce international politics to the, you know, the mafia protection money approach. I mean, those seem like much bigger things to me.
Find me some votes.
Find me some votes. Oh, those are the big things. And of course, those are the things that are not coming up.
Yeah. Well, you got a porn star in this one. So,
yeah. So. Yeah. It would be fun when Stormy gets up there, probably.
Yeah. So. Well, there's that other one. There's like a playmate or something, McDougal, or forget her name.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She's a whole part of it. And they were together like for 10 months or something. I mean,
really?
She thought that like she was the next Mrs. Trump. And, so she's going to have some good stuff to say.
I would hope so.
Okay, enough of that. We're going to take a brief break, and then we're going to come back with, I've got a wombat story. We haven't had a wombat story.
Excellent.
The world's oldest wombat. We will meet the world's oldest wombat.
Excellent. What, it's like four or something.
Yeah. How about you? You got anything?
Well, I actually have a personal story about a former student of mine who is now, very soon, going to be the director of the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art.
Oh, excellent. So, all right, we'll be back in a couple minutes. We got to play some announcements.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
Attention WORT volunteers and donors. WORT is holding an election for 2 open participating member seats and 1 open listener sponsor seat to serve 3-year terms on the board of directors of Back Porch Radio Broadcasting, Inc., with terms beginning at the annual meeting in June and concluding at the annual meeting in June 2027. Financial acumen, computer literacy, and a willingness to work within a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, May 15th to ensure consideration. Voting begins Thursday, May 30th and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 30th. More information and board applications are available at WORTFM.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
Wartstock is coming to Warner Park on Sunday, May 19th, and we're holding a raffle with some great prizes. Winners will take home 1 of 5 Summer Music Festival weekend passes, and we've added dinner for 6 with tequila tastings at Migrants, worth over $700, a pair of season passes to Forward Theater, stays from Marquette and Ruby Marie Hotels, and a crystal and onyx necklace from Goodman's Jewelers. Gift certificates from Sardine, Orange Tree Imports, Ten Pin Alleys, and much, much more. Plus, merch from Wine and Hop Shop, and of course, some great wart swag. Tickets are $3 each, 2 for $5 and 5 for $10. Drawing is at 5 p.m. at Wartstock, but you do not need to be present to win. Tickets are available at upcoming wart events or at the station. A complete list of prizes is on our website at wartfm.org. Good luck.
I feel lucky today.
Message here. I don't know what the provenance of this is, so don't believe this with absolute certainty. But we did get someone call in and say tonight is fetish night at the Cardinal. I don't know if that's see if you can find it anywhere, Mel. I hate to put something out there if I don't really know what's going on. And fetish night at the Cardinal.
And it's a fetish night at the Cardinal.
Okay. Is that tonight?
It's June 21st, 2023.
Oh.
Every third Friday.
Every third Friday.
Okay.
Is this every third Friday?
I think so.
I think it is. All right.
We'll call it that.
So my special fetish is I like to dress up as a clown and throw pies at people. So if you share that fetish, you might want to go to the Cardinal. Bar. And if you have some other fetish, that's, you know, you like to run full speed backward in the doorknobs or something. Whatever it is that you like, please indulge that, apparently, on the third Friday of every month. And we have determined, top astrologers have let us know that this is the third Friday of the month of April. So.
All right, I mentioned the world's oldest wombat.
Yes, I hardly wait.
The world's oldest wombat is shuffling toward his mid-30s.
That's pretty good. I didn't realize they lived that
exceeding
long.
Exceeding the average wild wombat's age by an estimated 20 years. So they live about, about 10 years in the wild.
It's hard in the wild. Yeah. It really is.
His name is Wayne, also known as Mr. Wine. That's like wine, the beverage.
Oh, okay.
Not wine like the former president.
Yeah, wombat's not wine. They just get it done.
Yeah, so. He lives in Tasmania. Yep. Or he started out in Tasmania, but he spent most of his life in Japan.
Oh, so, okay.
All yeah, right. So he's got dual citizenship. So.
He speaks it with an accent, yes.
He was found as an orphan in November of 1989.
Wow, he has been around.
Spent a brief period of care in northern Tasmania before being sent overseas to mark a long-standing relationship between a city in Tasmania and its sister city in Japan.
Very good. Is he with other wombats? Or
I don't know.
What is his life like?
They don't mention that.
He's just old.
Yeah.
So. Sits and watch wombat
Sits
TV
and
all day.
Complains how cold it is.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Get a shawl for the wombat, too.
the keeper, the owner of the wildlife sanctuary, said that... Wayne definitely looked like an old wombat, but was in excellent condition for his age.
Yep. Yeah, that's what they say. I still think that four legs thing works out a lot better when you get older.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So
the two leg thing? Oh, no way, man.
No, yeah. No. Well, because then you have like weird engineering like knees and backs
oh, yeah.
and stuff that just, they're not good.
And you get a little, you know... A little gravity challenge, yeah. a little stumbly, a little woozy. Yeah. I mean, anything can just topple you right
You know,
over.
Wisconsin, I believe it's the number one state for falling. And
yeah,
and
I can't imagine
injured.
Why.
Yeah.
I can't imagine why.
Exactly. Well, it's a three-pronged approach.
Yes.
You got the weather, which is crappy.
Oh, yeah. Whoop.
You got ice and snow and sleet and stuff. And then, you have the drinking, the drinking culture, which is big. Plus, we're an old state.
Yeah, so you're an old guy drinking in January. You're pretty much doomed.
Yeah, you might as well just...
just fall on purpose, Let's break something right now.
I'm at the age where I get a lot of, junk mail from, funeral homes and people wanting to do my estate and things like that. A lot of free steak dinners being thrown my way nowadays.
Wow. That's when you know you've made it.
I had an MRI yesterday.
Oh, did you really?
And they were very nice to me. They gave me an extra pillow. They gave me a little blanket. Yeah. Made sure I was comfortable.
That's sweet.
Then I ordered a Long Island iced tea.
Yeah. Because nothing helps your heart like a Long Island iced tea. I had an echocardiogram a couple years ago.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. And I got to watch it. It was very fun. I said, the great thing about getting older is you get to see your insides more.
Yeah.
And the woman said, well, what else have you seen? I said, well, I was awake for one of my colonoscopies. And she said, well, how does this compare? And I said, well, the colonoscopy was in color. And she said, I'm not so sure that's great. And I'm like, yeah, good point. Any rate, so I do want to do a shout out to the new director of the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art. His name is Paul Baker Prindle, and he was a student of mine many years ago, and now he's been at a bunch of different places, including the John and Geraldine Lilly Museum of Art in Reno, and he's been he was at the Gagosian Gallery, he was at the John Michael Kohler Arts Center in Sheboygan, but he's now the new director of the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art. He's a very, very intelligent, very, very wise man who knows much about the field of art
and, very cool.
and about the community and trying to make sure that there's diversity in our art presentations and that everybody feels welcome. He's going to be moving to Madison and starting his job on May 9th, and I was just so pleased as punch to see that he has that job. So.
Oh, very nice. So. We could submit the Clopsy art to him. Maybe we can have a little exhibit there.
Exactly.
We're still going to have something.
That's the in.
That.
Well, I'll use that as my in. Remember me?
Yeah.
Remember me?
Yeah.
That guy. We got some good art for you.
Had a dog with one eye.
Yeah. Various versions of that dog with one eye. It's not just any old dog with one eye.
Oh. So archaeologists have uncovered a treasure trove, it says here, a treasure trove of evidence that humans once occupied a cave in Saudi Arabia formed by flowing lava.
Oh, a lava tube.
So it was the very first game of The Floor is Lava. And those weren't pillows.
Yeah, right.
but apparently they lived in there for a sure. long time. This is like 10,000 years ago.
Yep.
And the age of these findings indicates the cave was regularly used as a dwelling for at least 7,000 years, possibly up to the Bronze Age.
Very nice. Well, you read that book about colonizing Mars. That was one of the proposals in there, that if indeed we were even, you know, like just trying to think of how we can make it more likely. One of the things that could make it more likely is if we actually went and lived in lava caves on Mars, because there are lava tubes there.
Oh, okay.
And basically it would screen out a lot of the deadly radiation from space, which currently it doesn't have any kind of electromagnetic field that would block that. But of course the problem is the ground there is also deadly. So, but that would be one.
Yeah. But one day it'd also screen out the Mormons coming door to door.
So, oh, you think? Yeah,
so, maybe.
Yeah, they're pretty persistent.
They really are.
Yeah. Campaign and I went to the symphony the other day, and we accidentally dressed almost exactly alike. And we realized all we needed were those little black name tags, and it pretty much would be, hello, hello.
Got your watchtower.
My name is Elder Smarty Pants.
Let me talk to the angel about that.
Yeah.
See what the angel says.
Hey, when you think of animal self-recognition, you tend to think of things like chimpanzees and crows and elephants, you know, things that can distinguish themselves like in a mirror.
Oh, sure.
But it turns out that this ability is, maybe we've been a little biased on this. This ability may be more widely spread than we think. According to Noam Miller, he's a comparative psychologist at the Wilfrid Laurier University, Ontario. He's an author of a new paper in the Proceedings of the Royal Society. So there's a bias out there about other animals that don't seem very cognitive, and one that he focused on in particular were snakes. He's discovered that there are certain kinds of snakes that are obviously able to tell themselves from other snakes when they look at themselves. As a result, two species of snakes were tested: North American eastern garter snakes, which are predators of insects and fish, and the African ball pythons, which is a largely solitary snake that ambushes rodents. By the way, when you're a snake, you pretty much have to ambush everything. Just let you know, that's just kind of the game, you know what I mean? Snakes, like humans, have oil in their skin that leaves a scent trail, and the team rubbed makeup removal pads along the snake's underside to collect scent samples. And they found out that the snakes were able to tell who was who based on this. So they can actually figure out it's me and not them. It's not just some random other snake. So they're able to, they have a low level of snake self-recognition.
Wow.
Hopefully they're not racked with snake guilt or anything like that. But if you were a snake, there'd be a lot of guilt there. But no, they can barely tell themselves from other snakes. So that's kind of interesting.
I was interested in the part where they were putting the makeup remover on the snakes. Well, hey, run to CVS. We're running a little low on the snake makeup remover.
Well, that blue eyeshadow really gets in the way when you're doing the experiment. Well,
you got to have that for the selfies. You know?
Yeah, right.
Hey, look at me. Okay. Pout your lips out a little bit.
Yeah, most of the things that they actually work with are things like, you know, pandas and. They found that elephants do recognize themselves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I knew that.
And strangely enough, roosters will recognize themselves, too. Probably because they're so territorial. They have a very strong sense that that's another thing that I'm competing with. Pandas, interestingly enough, though, they couldn't tell.
Oh, they don't give a damn about
whatever.
Anything.
I'm just a big ball of fur.
Yeah. I just want to eat and roll around.
Yeah, right. Pandas. I've said this before, but pandas, if you believe there's intelligent design, look at a panda. It's like, what a mess. It's got the intestinal tract of a carnivore, and it only eats bamboo, which means it has to continuously eat and poop, eat and poop, eat and poop, eat and poop. And it doesn't have anything in its mechanism sort of for grabbing the bamboo, except for a weird little bone spur that it's got on its paw. It's like, I could think of a better animal than that. I mean, it's like, they should put that in a book, like God's Biggest Boners. You know, like, really? That's an animal? What? Did you let your brother-in-law do that?
The former parent of two middle school students who was bored uninvited, 30 Rock actor Malik Pancholoy. I'm not sure.
I don't know either.
Right. He was the Jonathan, the assistant to Baldwin's character on 30 Rock.
Okay.
And he's gay.
Is he now?
Yes.
That happens.
He was gonna
even in the best of families.
He was gonna give a talk there on anti-bullying.
Yeah.
And
they're pro-bullying there.
They apparently are because they canceled his talk.
Wow.
And so a couple board members raised concern over his lifestyle during a public meeting, and the board unanimously overturned the approval of the appearance. Mm. So,
what style of life did he have, by the way?
Well, I told you he was gay.
Oh, yeah.
And that's about it. So,
is he married?
Doesn't say.
Because if he's married, that means they're probably not having any sex.
Right. A member said, "It's not discriminating against his lifestyle. That's his choice, but it's him speaking about it."
What?
He was going to talk about bullying and you know how people pick on other people because
bullying is how we get our way. Don't you understand? The threat of violence is how all this works.
Some people just don't understand.
No, they just don't get it, do they? They just don't get it.
Yeah, apparently he regularly delivers keynotes on the topics of diversity and inclusion. Well, there's a problem right there.
There's your problem, yeah.
In corporate settings and at universities across the country.
Yeah.
His activism includes an appointment in 2014 by Barack Obama to serve on the President's Advisory Commission on Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders.
So the first cicadas are starting to emerge.
Are they really?
Yep. Later this month. So the soil needs to be about 64 degrees Fahrenheit and up to a depth of about 6 inches. And then you need a good soaking rain. And that's when they really pop, apparently. So get ready for that. The last time we had the brood 19 and the brood 8, what is it? No, the brood... Is it 19? Yeah, brood 19 and brood 13, the great southern brood and the northern Illinois brood come out at the same time, was 1803.
Really?
Thomas Jefferson was president, and I blame it all on him. But it's going to be a 16-state area. That'll be the center stage for this. Forested areas, including urban green spaces, are more likely to see a higher number of cicadas than agricultural regions, interestingly enough. And... So let's see. They estimate about a trillion cicadas, and if each cicada is about an inch long, that would cover 15,782,828 miles if they were placed end to end. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they were.
Yeah.
So all I can think of when I hear this, though, is that mighty good eating out there.
A lot of protein.
A lot of protein. How's this going to be?
Are we getting those in Wisconsin, or are we too far north?
I don't know whether we're... I don't know that. Oh. They're certainly getting them in Illinois. You know that.
Okay. So they're getting close.
They look a little creepy, but then, you know, bugs kind of do that anyway. So,
that's a bug thing.
That's a bug thing. Yeah, that's their whole shtick.
Oh, here's another negative story about the economy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I hate to bring these up, but super yacht sales took a dive last year.
As opposed to taking a dive off of a super yacht.
Yeah. there were long waiting lists, soaring costs, and oligarch sanctions. That oligarch sanctions.
Oh, that'll do her. Oh, those poor oligarchs.
Sales of the new super yachts, that's yachts over 100 feet long, fell 17% last year, according to the new Super Yacht Times State of Yachting Report.
Wow. And that's just in Russia.
Which raises a lot of questions, the fact that there's a Super Yacht Times State of Yachting Report.
Yeah. I think they're all going for hyper yachts now.
Is that it?
That's actually what it is. Yeah, they basically take two super yachts and then they breed them.
Yeah.
And then they create a hyper yacht.
When two super yachts love each other
very
much.
Very much, yes, exactly.
Make a little submarine. So.
I have a super slow-mo yacht.
Super slow-mo yacht? Oh, okay. Excellent.
So they quote a guy named Ralph Dazzert, and the only reason I mention
an assumed name.
The only reason I mention him is because his title. He's the head of intelligence at Super Yacht Times.
Doesn't sound like it's a terribly stressful job.
He said, if you're a buyer, and this is for those of you out there buying super yachts.
Because our audience is prime.
If you're putting in an order for a new yacht over 200 feet, you face wait times of 3 to 4 years due to backlogs.
Oh, heavens.
Stemming from the pandemic.
Oh, my.
Prices are soaring due to higher labor and materials costs. There's higher labor costs there.
Oh, well, we got to change that.
We can fix that.
Yeah, yeah.
Dazzert expects, he's his head of intelligence, so he knows what he's talking about. He expects new super yacht sales to go down a little bit further this year, given the continued costs and delays. So that Freedom Caucus in the Capitol.
Yeah.
They've got a subgroup. And it's the, this is real.
It's all about subs.
This is No, it's something to try to like keep things moving and, you know, like their action team, like their tiger team kind of.
Yeah.
And it's called the Floor Action Response Team. And that acronym is spells FART.
They need another acronym that spells OLD. I think they pretty much summed it up.
I worked for a place one time, a government agency, and we did a reorg because you do reorgs.
Fear our mighty reorg.
Every once in a while, you redo the org chart and you move the chairs around and you say, look at the progress we've made.
Yeah, yeah.
And they rename, and then you rename everything, and they renamed our section the automatic. Not the automated security section.
Well, okay. So we debated this in my family because my younger sister named her child, I won't say the child's name.
Oh, no.
But the initials spelled ASS. Mm-hmm. And we think she did it on purpose because that's what she's like, right? But this is Dr. Peyton Lawrence,
right.
Remember?
Sure.
And, yeah. And so we thought that she did it on purpose. But I think she actually did it accidentally. And she later changed the spelling of her child's first name so it doesn't spell that anymore. So
put like a silent P in there, like pterodactyl or what?
PSS, yes. P as in pterodactyl.
Yeah, try that at Starbucks. Oh, God. So. Ecuador has ordered public and private sector workers to take Thursdays and Fridays off to save energy in response to unprecedented power outages. So they've got a 3-day work week in Ecuador for now.
Wow. Hey, a commission in Germany has just been convened and finished its report. The government-appointed commission recommended on Monday of this week that lawmakers legalize abortion in the Federal Republic of Germany for the first trimester of pregnancy. Now, Germany has always de facto had abortion, but their constitution, and they were very nervous about this after the Second World War, their constitution, its first article is, you know, the sanctity of life will not be denied, and most people think that that would include the fetus. So they've allowed... in practice, they've allowed abortions up to 12 weeks, but they're now going to put it in the law. And basically, women would go to councils of experts who would say, "Yeah, this is warranted by the circumstances." But this legislative proposal, it's hard to know what'll happen. The largest conservative party, the so-called Christian Democrats, have said that they would challenge the status quo. But the majority government, the Social Democrats, the Greens, and the Free Democrats, that's a three-way coalition, they're saying they're going to go forward with it. So it very big in a democratic nation where people get to vote for people and then those people actually get to, like, vote for laws, it may actually pass. It's a funny way to do things, but we'll see how it happens.
It's sort of a related note that Arizona's law banning nearly all abortion, which is was written nearly 50 years before it became a state, when under 7,000 people lived in the territory. And there are also stories that the person who wrote it was like an abuser and a rapist, and his main reason for writing that is so that he wouldn't get in trouble and he could like keep his little brood together.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Well, it was the 1860s or whatever. I mean, it's not going to be real enlightened.
Yeah.
I mean,
the laws actually, there weren't any laws in the United States against it before a certain time.
Right.
I mean, we can go into that some other time. But
okay, time to declare. The weekend. Enjoy your weekend. It's going to be Earth Day on Sunday. So
Sunday. And Monday is the 300th anniversary of the birth of Immanuel Kant. So,
okay.
Send out your Kant cards now.
And visit Earth on Sunday. So it's 2 o'clock. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM Madison. Pants, great seeing you. Have a great week, everybody. The kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks for You with the Real Jaguar. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, April 19th.
This is Bird Note. Singers with a wide vocal range are thrilling to hear in concert. Even if you don't have any big names touring nearby, you can find birds with impressive vocal talents, like the widespread Northern Cardinal. In seconds, cardinals sweep through high to low notes many times. Even a virtuoso human singer would be hard-pressed to do that. The secret is in the clever way cardinals use their vocal organ, called the syrinx. With the right side of their syrinx, cardinals start whistling a high note, smoothly falling in pitch. Then, without a pause in the whistle, cardinals switch to the left side of the syrinx, which they control independently, and belt out the lower notes. Here's the song slowed down. Notice how seamless the whistles are. Dividing their vocal range between the two parts of the syrinx helps cardinals sing complex songs rapidly. The result seems effortless, but the best musicians always do make it look easy.